This week at Macy's, get an extra 20% off with your coupon or Macy's card. That's on top of already great deals, like 25 to 60% off cold weather gear for the whole family, 30 to 60% off select bedding and bath, plus 30% off select small appliances. And Star Rewards members earn on every purchase, except gift cards, services, and fees at Macy's, Macy's Backstage, and Market by Macy's. More at Macy's.com/Star Rewards. Savings off sale and clearance prices. Exclusions apply.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for May 19th, 2016. I am Brendan Cassidy, and I am actually co-hostless today, as both JD and Maddie Negs are unavailable this week, but obviously the show must go on, and I cannot do this alone. So whenever this happens, we always try to solicit the help of some of our good friends within our podcasting circle, and joining me today is our good friend David Hart from Pop Culture Case Study. David, welcome back to the show, man, and thanks for filling in on such short notice, by the way.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back, but what is with these lazy people you work with? What are they, like, raising kids or something? Come on.
I know at least one of them is.
Serious business, this podcasting for free. Come on.
I know, right? We should be getting paid for all this crap. But no, they obviously have some legit excuses and can't be here, and they're actually kind of bummed because I know that they're really looking forward to eventually talking about the kind of films that we'd be talking about on this show, so they're really bummed about it, but I'm glad to have you here at least, because I think the last time we had you on the show was when we talked about Brooklyn for our main show, I believe.
Yeah, you and I almost came to blows. Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to talk about that because I'm really excited for the show, because even though that's just that one show that people have to bounce off of, but we've discussed a few movies offline on Twitter or maybe even Facebook, I think, every now and then. We don't always see eye to eye on certain things.
Yes, that is very true.
So hopefully this might be a different case, or if it's not, it might make for a very entertaining discussion, to say the least. So we shall see, my friend.
All right.
Before we get going, though, for those that aren't terribly familiar with Pop Culture Case Study, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find you online, and basically everything that you do at that show?
Sure. Well, Pop Culture Case Study is, of course, another movie podcast, so that's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. But we take a little bit of a different angle. I'm a graduate student in psychology, so mm-hmm. I basically talk about a movie and talk about some psychological construct that ties in, and then bring in a guest as well. Sure. We do two episodes a week, one about an older movie and one about a new release, and hopefully there's some sort of connection between the two. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm on Twitter, at PC Case Study. You can look up Pop Culture Case Study on all of your, you know, all of your podcatchers. It will absolutely be there. But engage with me on Twitter. That's the place I'm most active, for sure. Maybe too active.
You can never be too active on Twitter, if you ask me. And for all those listening, I cannot recommend your show enough, David. If you're out there looking for a very surprisingly intelligent conversation about film that would almost basically stimulating some ideas that you wouldn't normally think about, this is the show for you. And you've actually educated me very well on certain films that I've always either loved or maybe not loved so much, but you've helped give me a different angle on some of those. So really great stuff, man. Hopefully we can have that kind of conversation on this show today. So we shall
and,
see.
And spoiler alert, Brendan will be making his first appearance on Pop Culture Case Study coming up in the next couple months. So
hopefully,
exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully we don't get too sick of each other in the next couple days, man.
That's right, yeah.
But anyway, thanks again for being here. Looking forward to this conversation. So for those not terribly familiar with our extra film segment, this is a chance where we get to basically talk about some of the smaller films, independent films, art house films, or perhaps even some of the classics that we don't get a chance to talk about on the main show. And we've got a little bit of all of the above represented on this show. We'll be starting off doing a throwback review, very similar to what we did on last week's extra film, where myself and JD reviewed John Carney's Once in preparation for his latest film, Sing Street. Well, this week, our good friend Shane Black has a new film coming out with The Nice Guys, so we thought this would be a great opportunity to look back on his film, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which I look forward to getting into very much. That'll be in the first half of the show. For the second half of the show, we will be talking about a small little horror film that just came out that was just released on Netflix, I believe, Mike Flanagan's Hush, which should be a fun discussion as well. Kind of talking about our disagreements a little bit, David, because I know horror films have been one of the big ones that we have disagreed with quite heavily. So
going back to It Follows, and I can't remember your feelings on The Babadook, but I love both of those.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of either of them. But the thing is, I realize I am in the minority on those two films, and I recognize that. And I keep trying to give them both another chance. So hopefully we have some agreements on this small one. We shall see when it gets to that point. But should be a fun discussion. One thing I want to plug really fast, and I was just talking about it a little bit earlier, be sure that you get a chance to check out our latest main review. We're on episode 169. We talked about John Carney's Sing Street and also our top three favorite movie soundtracks. A very, very daunting task, but it was a very fun discussion.
With you and JD, man.
That's... Oh, God, yeah. You know how much we love our music and our films, but the challenge with that is we separated out musical scores, so we just focused on soundtracks itself. But even so, it was still rather challenging, but a good show, very fun. Be sure you check that out. On that note, though, David, we've got a lot of good films to talk about here, so let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. David, I peed on it.
What? You peed on what?
I peed on the corpse. Can they, like, ID for that?
I'm sorry, you peed on...
On the corpse. My question is...
Like, no, my question. I get to go first. Why in perfect hell would you pee on a corpse?
I didn't intend to. It's not like I did it for kicks or anything.
Say again? They gave her back.
Yes. She's in my shower. I'm looking at her, for Christ's sake.
That's impossible. They don't even know you. They couldn't possibly.
No, they couldn't. You're right. And since the body can't be here and this is all a dream, and oh, look, there's Alma the elf. Good morning, Alma. What's in your basket?
Shut up. How did they get in?
I don't know. I mean, how am I supposed to know how they got in? Virus gate, maybe?
Okay, first things first. We gotta move her somewhere. You got gloves?
Excuse me?
Gloves. Do you have gloves? You have to move her. If it's a frame-up, some asshole's probably calling the cops on you right now. Do this. Wrap up the body in a blanket, a sheet, anything.
Okay. Any particular kind of gloves?
Yes. Fawn. Will you f***ing hurry?
Barry.
Yeah?
I peed on it.
What? What, you peed on what?
I peed on the corpse. Can they do, like, ID from that?
I'm sorry, you peed on...
On the corpse, and my question is...
No, my question. I get to go first. Why in perfect hell would you pee on a corpse?
I didn't intend to. It's not like I did it for kicks. God, this isn't happening. You said this doesn't happen. This is your fault.
Shut up and listen.
All right, so Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is written and directed by Shane Black and stars Robert Downey Jr., Val Kilmer, Michelle Monaghan, and a few others as well that we'll certainly get into. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're doing this throwback review in preparation for Shane Black's new film coming out this weekend in The Nice Guys. We thought this would be a perfect opportunity to look back on this kind of a cult classic, I guess you could say. And I think it's going to warrant some fun discussion, David. And I feel like a lot of people out there know this film fairly well, so I won't boil down into the details of the plot. I'll just toss it right over to you. What did you think about the film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Well, first of all, apparently great minds think alike, because I did the same thing on my show this week, ready for The Nice Guys. And The Nice Guys, I am really stoked for. It's for me the movie I'm most looking forward to for the year. So I'm really ready for this. I'm really excited. And of course, like Shane Black, I think, you know, he came into kind of the mainstream with Lethal Weapon and, you know, moved on down and ended up being a part of the Marvel cinematic machine. You know, it was Iron Man 3, which I actually really enjoyed, but I actually had missed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Like, it was one of those movies that's been on my list forever to watch. So I've just watched it for the first time the last couple weeks, and I've now watched it three times. So that should tell you how I feel about it. I really enjoyed this movie. I think this movie is super cool, super fun, has a great cast. You know, of course, Robert Downey Jr., I mean, just looks like he's playing like a, you know, a less narcissistic version of Tony Stark here. Sure. You can definitely see the threads there. But for me, who stands out more than anybody is Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer destroys this role. Like, he is absolutely perfect. It's one of those roles that if you cast anyone else, I'm not sure it would work. Like, he's just so, so perfect and keeps up with Robert Downey Jr., which not everyone can do. So this is, this movie has become like, it's like gone from I've never seen it to I'm trying to figure out like where it is in my favorite movies. Like, I absolutely adore it. It's fantastic.
Wow. Well, I guess that we won't be disagreeing on this one. So we finally have something to kind of hug it out about, man. First thing I'll echo is I didn't first see this film like only a few weeks ago, but this one was a bit of a late bloom for me. It was only a few years ago since I first watched it, and I actually had seen movies like Lethal Weapon and even Iron Man 3 prior to ever seeing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Unlike you, though, I'm not a huge fan of Iron Man 3, and that's mostly just looking at it within the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think it's a good Shane Black film, but I'm not sure it's a good MCU film, so it's kind of...
I can see that.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm kind of torn in that regard, so it's kind of a double-edged sword, but when it comes to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, this is... The movie is just a riot. It's an absolute riot. It's very brisk and to the point. There's never a dull or wasted moment in this film, and it is just so entertaining. It is in the classic tradition of classic Hollywood film noir, but basically amped up to 11. and it's done in such a satirical way that feels kind of relevant for our time in many ways. So that's what I love so much about this film is, on one hand, you can really look at it as just a really fun thrill ride as it is. I have to echo the casting here, especially Val Kilmer, who I agree with you. I cannot see anyone else in this role doing what he is able to do here. I actually would go as far as to say I think it's one of the most underappreciated supporting performances in the male category that I've seen. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr., fresh off of his, I guess, his detox, if you will, kind of. You can almost argue this and then Zodiac and then Iron Man were really the trio that led to his official comeback. And I think you can almost argue a lot of that started here. And there's a lot of great stories with how he had just finally sobered up, that Val Kilmer, while on set for this film, wouldn't even drink in front of him at all because he really wanted to pay respect to what he had just been going through. But that sense of camaraderie, just in a story like that, you can sense that just within these characters in this film, because their bond is so strange, but you love every single moment that they share together. And it leads to just some incredible chemistry. It is so much fun to watch. And all at the same time, and this is kind of the other hand portion of this film for me, is that I think Shane Black has a lot to say with this film. I think that this film is surprisingly pretty resonant as far as what it's trying to say thematically. And I think the whole notion of using, you know, Hollywood, using the notion of fame and celebrity, is trying to get into these notions of how a lot of people just always are trying to be something that they're not. You can almost say that we're almost method actors in our own lives, and it uses method acting as kind of an interesting symbol to drive that home. And there's some good satire and irony to help drive that as well. And there's a lot of other things going on underneath, but it all kind of works together. And I think even going along that even further, there is a slight romance in this film as well, with the Michelle Monaghan character, who is also very good here. And in a normal movie like this, I feel like this romance could almost feel a bit, maybe almost out of place, maybe even unearned. But here it shows the true nature of who these characters are, and I think it beautifully juxtaposes those notions of quote-unquote method acting this film is kind of almost satirizing. And it's a nice... That contradiction, I think, creates a nice balance of what this film is getting thematically. So while it is so much fun to watch, I think it is very resonant at the same time, which I think makes this for a very rewarding experience just for what it is. And I am like you. I love this film.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Michelle Monaghan. I think she's really underappreciated, both here and in general.
Yeah.
As I watched this movie, all I could think about is, like, why hasn't she gotten more work? Like, she's fantastic here. She's also really good in Gone Baby Gone. I really enjoyed her performance there.
Yes.
And you know, of course, in True Detective. And there's not a lot of roles where I looked through her IMDb and I was like, oh, she was terrible in that. That was a terrible movie. Like, she's made some interesting good choices, but yet that hasn't really translated to this huge kind of Hollywood / box office success.
Right.
And that's kind of a shame because she's really good here. And she and Robert Downey Jr. have just impeccable chemistry together. Like, just like you mentioned, seeing Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer together, you feel that bond. The same thing with him and Michelle Monaghan. Like, you really feel their connection, even if the romance is definitely off center and definitely off kilter and a little strange. You know, there's a lot that goes on in this movie where you're like, okay, Harry, you're kind of acting like a child. Let's get over our past. Let's move forward. But you still, I think, at least from my perspective, I was still rooting for them throughout the entire film. And that's impressive in a movie that purports itself to be as light as this is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, there are, like you said, these deeper themes there, but those are way beneath the surface. And I think just watching this movie, it just feels like a light, fun kind of mystery to go along with. And so for the romance to work is pretty impressive.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you bring that up, that, you know, what the film is trying to get thematically is very deep underneath the surface. But if you just watch this film on its surface level, it's incredibly entertaining, which I feel like is where a lot of maybe modern and very thematically heavy films sometimes fail, is because those movies don't really work unless you're trying to get the big meaning of what this film is trying to say. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang has those deep meanings, but you don't need to fish for it in order to enjoy this film. You can enjoy it as a surface level thrill ride, as we've been talking about. But what I think is so interesting, and I'm going to be the one to kind of go a little deeper, as I like to always do, I think why the chemistry really works between, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and Michelle Monaghan in this film specifically, and even with Val Kilmer, when you look at this trio here, the sense of camaraderie feels so well earned, because you can almost argue that a lot of these three characters are really in very similar places in their lives, especially Michelle Monaghan and Robert Downey Jr. You look at Michelle Monaghan's character, who was kind of driven to wanting to go to Hollywood to strive for this sort of celebrity lifestyle that I think the film is really almost satirizing. Even the film's major mystery, which revolves around the death of her sister, is also kind of like that. But I feel like a lot of these characters are either trying to be something that they're not, and then only in those moments of authenticity do they find that they actually have this bond together that really makes the sense of camaraderie feel more well-earned. And I think that's why the chemistry works so well, and why you just have so much fun watching it, is because there is a surprising honesty that Shane Black does bring to this film in both his writing and his direction, which I kind of want to talk a little bit about his direction here, and then I'll toss it back to you. Is the film is just so, I think it's beautifully shot. I think just from a cinematography standpoint, it is very crisp. It's very well edited and put together. It's very brisk. But I love his use of cinematography in this film, especially the color palette and the way he makes nighttime just look so sinister. The way he utilizes like the blues and how that contrasts with everything that's going on, I think just paints a very vivid portrayal of what this lifestyle is in Hollywood. And I thought that was very interesting as well.
Yeah, you bring up a great point with a lot of this film taking place at night. I think there's a lot of really well-known directors that could learn a lot from Shane Black here.
Mm-hmm.
You're right, it does look sinister, but most importantly, you can actually see what's going on.
Yes.
I think a lot of times with movies based at nighttime, for the majority, your eyes are straining, you're struggling to figure out what's happening. There's never a single moment in this film where you don't know which character is which and where they're standing and where they're running. He also does a great job with the action sequences. And you really have to take advantage of them, because there's not that many of them.
Right.
So if either one of them goes sideways, then you're kind of like, oh, well, that could have been good, but it wasn't. And I think, you know, of course, he didn't direct Lethal Weapon, but has some experience in these, you know, comedy / action films. So maybe that translated over. The other thing he did, both from kind of a writing and directing standpoint, which I really loved, is that we had a character who was gay, but not a stereotype.
Yes.
If anything, he was the more masculine of the two men in the film, which I absolutely loved. And he never dodges the fact that he's gay. He's never ashamed of it. He just, like, people call him Gay Perry, and he's like, yeah, I like guys, whatever. Let's move on with the story. Mm-hmm. And I love his portrayal there, that he didn't feel the need to be swishy or to have a limp wrist at any point in the film. He was just a character, and being gay was one part of that character. It wasn't the entire thing.
Yeah, I love that they don't call so much attention to it for the sake of doing so, like another film maybe of this type probably would. And Val Kilmer, right. I think that's what makes his performance so great, is that he plays it so cool, and he purposely calls attention to himself, but in the best ways possible, without getting either, I guess, almost politically incorrect, if that makes any sense. But
right.
but I love a lot of the jokes he uses around that too. Like, he even at one point says, "Yeah, I'm Gay Perry," and I just love the name. I just love the name. He comments on how much he just loves the name, and it also leads to a really, really funny homophobic scene where they're getting interrogated by this one criminal that has captured them, and just his use of where he places that gun, but his reason for doing so, saying, "Oh, they never checked there." It is brilliant. And that's another transition I want to talk about briefly before we go into any final thoughts, is Shane Black as a writer, I think, is one of the most underappreciated writers of modern filmmaking today, especially of this genre. Because I think these types of films, especially Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, you can maybe lump within kind of the company of someone like a Guy Ritchie, maybe if you want to lump it with someone like Quentin Tarantino, who has done similar films like this early in his career. They're very different in their own way. But Shane Black is really good at just maintaining a certain vibrancy and also giving us characters that we surprisingly find ourselves just warmed up by. And he did the same thing in Lethal Weapon. And I believe he also wrote the script for Lethal Weapon 2, or he may have just come up with the story for it. I'm not 100% sure. But I think Lethal Weapon 2 is another film that also carries that charm, even in that film. 3 and 4, I haven't seen, and I don't care to see those. but, you know, his writing, I think, is just so great at building this sense of earned camaraderie that you actually feel a dramatic urgency for that is kind of surprising. And this film is exactly why I'm so looking forward to a film like The Nice Guys. And I'm with you. It's definitely one of my most anticipated films of the year, and we're finally getting to see it this weekend. But his writing is just it's so wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. You bring up the camaraderie, but I think the other important part is he tends to create stories with two characters who end up working together really well, but they're very different. They're like diametrically opposed, whether it's Lethal Weapon, whether it's The Last Boy Scout, you know, or whether it's this, like, very different characters. But it never feels forced. Like, you brought up the term earned earlier. Mm-hmm. That camaraderie never feels like, oh, well, that's just movie stuff.
Right.
It doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like it's earned throughout the film, and that usually these two men end up connecting in a pretty deep way by the end of a kind of relatively, you know, on the surface, silly film. And that's the other thing that's great about Shane Black, is he creates these stories that are actually really dark.
Yeah.
But have just enough lightness in them that you don't really feel that darkness, doesn't feel oppressive. It feels like, oh, these guys are in a bad situation, but they're going to find a way out. And it's just, he is very underappreciated. I mean, even movies like, you know, Last Action Hero, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Sure.
I mean, they're well-written films. You can say what you will about how they ended up, but from a screenplay perspective, like, and The Nice Guys, I will be shocked if I don't enjoy the hell out of that movie.
I think I will too, based on just how this conversation's going. But I'll absolutely agree with you. Even in some of those, I guess, lesser caliber films, you can sense that there was a good script underneath there that was really providing a good backbone for the film, I guess. But yeah, how those films ended up, you really got to blame the director on a lot of those films. I mean, I've seen Last Boy Scout. It's fine. I mean, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun. It's fine. It's nothing that I would call particularly that memorable in the long run, or one of my favorite movies of this kind of quote unquote buddy cop genre.
It definitely falls into like guilty pleasure for me. It's one of those that I think I really enjoy. I think I must have been a teenager when it came out, which is like the perfect time to watch a movie like that. So I think I always have that in my head every time I see it, or even see bits of it on TV. I'm like, ah, this is great.
Yeah. Absolutely. But what I think is also interesting, and then we'll get to final thoughts, is kind of like how you're talking about how he's Shane Black is very good at pairing these characters that are so different from each other. He's also very good at pairing characters together kind of by accident, and a lot of them end up in that sense. Even if you look at some of his past films, you can almost argue that same thing, but here it's even more apparent. But I think that's what adds to that sort of fun and that urgency that we were talking about earlier. For the sake of time, let's get to final thoughts and grades. So any final thoughts that you have, and what grade would you give Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Yeah, I guess the best final thought I can give this is that if The Nice Guys is better than Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it'll be the best movie of the year. That's how I feel about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's, you know, especially for quote unquote what it is, it's absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned, the cast is perfect. You know, Val Kilmer is fantastic. He steals the movie in a lot of ways, but he does get all the best kind of laugh out loud moments. But it's also really, it's a really fun detective story, too. Yeah. I think it's one of those movies that just about anybody can enjoy. So if you haven't seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang yet, we haven't ruined anything. Mm-hmm. Go stream it. Go rent it. Whatever you have to do. Go watch it right now.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. I would give this movie an A.
Good to hear, man. A few final thoughts I have. And, you know, we really didn't get into the plot that much with this film. I'm kind of glad we didn't, because as you mentioned, for those that may not have had a chance to see this film, go in as fresh as possible. I think that's really the best way to it. But you know, I guess just a brief thing. I mean, it does involve a murder mystery in Hollywood, and kind of by accident, if you will, but it goes on a lot of twists and turns that you either may or may not see coming. And at the same time, they're also very jarring. And when I first watched the film just a few short years ago, my biggest criticism of the film at the time was that it's so urgent in its pacing that sometimes you can potentially miss something just from a narrative standpoint overall. But the thing is, I can't criticize the film for that, because that's mostly a personal criticism on myself for just how well you pay attention at that specific moment. The same thing could be said about any film. This is a film that, you know, as I continue to watch it more, it's really not convoluted at all. Everything is there. It's just a matter of how quickly you can pick up on it. But I do think its brisk pace is very important to the film's structure, so I can't criticize it for those reasons. The last thing I want to talk about, and kind of going back into the film thematically a little bit, is I talked about these notions of using method acting as kind of a symbol of how we always try to blend in with our surroundings and basically try and be people who we really aren't. I feel like there's also a very underlying theme regarding fatherhood in this film as well. And I think, you know, you can simply argue the Harlan Dexter character played by Corbin Burnson. But I think all three of the main characters here, they all have, to put it lightly, daddy issues, I think. And even, you know, Michelle Monaghan's character here of Harmony Faith, she talks about that specifically, especially with her sister. And this leads to a moment at the film's climax involving Val Kilmer's character of Gay Perry, where he has a moment with someone's father. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments in the entire movie.
I agree. It's so well balanced, too, because it's very humorous in its execution. But at the same time, it led me questioning a lot about Perry's character, thinking there's a lot about his character we weren't told. There's probably a past there that we haven't been told about. But I think in the way that it's executed and making you think about that is what it was trying to do.
And I love that there's a throwaway line near the end of the movie about Perry's father.
Yes.
That you might not even, like, it comes off as a joke, but there's probably a lot of truth behind that joke. So there's definitely something there.
Absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up, because I think that is very key in not just defining that character from a fatherhood standpoint, but I do think it helps justify his actions in that scene in the film's climax. And I think there's a lot going on with his past that, even though we're not physically told all about it, there is some torment and pain there that somehow Shane Black does a great job balancing the drama of that scene and the humor of it. And that's a hard thing to do, and I think he does it very well. I'm like you, I would probably give this at least an A. I adore this film, and I continue to love it even more and more. It's a film I can continue to rewatch and find something new with it almost every time, and it's an easy watch. It's under 2 hours, so as we said, if you haven't seen it, go check out Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. We will have more thoughts on our Letterboxd page, which you can check out at letterboxd.com/incessionfilm. And if you agree or disagree with our takes on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm, or tweet us at incessionfilm, or leave us a comment on Google+, or email us directly at incessionfilm@gmail.com. So coming up in the second half of the show, we will continue this great movie conversation by looking at a smaller horror film that just came out on Netflix in Mike Flanagan's Hush. And as I mentioned, man, we've had some disagreements on horror films, so we'll see if this trend continues, but I look forward to it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This week's extra film is brought to you by the True Bromance Film Podcast. This podcast is hosted by our good friends Hiro and Barry, and these two have incredible chemistry together. Their banter is awesome, their film knowledge is also quite spectacular as well, and it's an absolute joy just to listen to these guys talk movies, and I'm sure you will have a great time listening to them as well. Every week, they'll review a new main release that has just come out, and they'll also have a top five section that relates back to that main review, kind of like a good cop, bad cop, or a best and worst kind of thing. It's a really great time, and they'll also talk about some of the other films that they've seen recently. So if you love movies and want to just hear two people talk about movies, this podcast is definitely up your alley. You could subscribe to them on iTunes as well as all other podcast platforms, or you can search for them on social media by simply searching for True Bromance Film. Tell them we sent you. It's absolutely worth your time, I promise. That's True Bromance Film Podcast. Hush, hush, I need the loving and I'm not to blame now. You got to hurt in the morning. You got to lay it in the evening. Oh, I need it. Hey, I got to get it. You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast Extra Film segment. I can come in anytime I want, and I can get you anytime I want, but I'm not going to. Not until it's time. When you wish you're dead, that's when I'll come inside.
I'm sorry about dinner. Do you want to come over? We can order in and watch a movie. John will be home in an hour, so he can join. I understand. Thank you for letting me borrow this. Thank you. I'll pop by tomorrow and brush up signs. I'm gonna get good. I'm determined. Kissing. Storyteller. Bitch.
All right, so Hush is directed by Mike Flanagan and stars Kate Siegel, Michael Trugo, Samantha Slowen, and a few others. That's really the majority of it, though, but there are a few others as well. I'm not going to say who the quote-unquote killer is, because it was actually kind of a surprise for me seeing another movie earlier this year and not realizing that this person was in it, so I'll leave it at that. But for those who may not be terribly familiar with Hush, as I mentioned, it's directed by Mike Flanagan, who gave us the film Oculus last year, which I think is a fairly underrated horror film from last year. I wouldn't call it great, but I enjoyed it from what I saw with it. But this film was released directly on Netflix. It's a very small film and simply involves a deaf writer who has retreated into the woods to live a solitary life. She's just kind of easing along until this masked figure comes and approaches her window and notices he can potentially try and take advantage of her in every way possible. So, David, before I directly toss it to you, as I've been mentioning quite a bit on this show, we don't always see eye to eye on certain films, and horror films I feel like have been kind of the biggie, because The Babadook and It Follows we disagreed on. In fact, I even think we disagreed on The Witch, because I don't think you were a huge fan of The Witch.
I thought it was fine, and that's about it.
Sure, I was a big fan of The Witch, but I do think we both loved Green Room, at least. So I think...
Yes.
Which is sitting...
Finally.
Yeah, which is sitting in my top three of the year so far, just to say that. But I'm curious about this little film. So what did you think about Hush?
You know, I really love this movie. I really enjoyed it. I wasn't really expecting to. Like, I had heard some pretty good things from the few reviews that were out there, but I luckily went in, totally blind to this film. Didn't know anything about it other than the title, and I thought the main performance of the girl who played Maddie, Kate Siegel, was just perfectly on point. Mm-hmm. It was suspenseful, it was scary, and it was scary for the same reasons a lot of horror movies are scary, except in this case it actually made sense. The reason she did the things that she did made sense. You know, of course she could get snuck up on, because, you know, she can't hear anyone coming.
Right.
I just thought it was, you know, and it's a short movie. It's like, I think, 80 minutes.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of wasted time in this film, but also they do a really good job in the first, like, maybe 15 minutes of building up these characters to people you care about. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, guess what, man? We're going to agree on a horror film for once.
Oh my God, it finally happened.
It finally happened, because I'm with you. You know, it's a very small film. There's not a whole lot to this film, but I really, really enjoyed it. In fact, I'm like you. I would go as far as to say I quite love this film. And for all the reasons that you're talking about, first off, the characters here are very well fleshed out. You very much care about these characters, and I do think Mike Flanagan does a great job setting up this world for us, so when things start to hit the fan, you find yourself caring about it. And at the same time, it establishes the Maddie character, played by Kate Siegel, who also co-wrote this film and is also married to Mike Flanagan in real life. I think what they're able to do with utilizing the sense of space within this film, and they've even said that they used a film like Die Hard as a very big example in kind of trying to make this sort of single location and the sense of claustrophobia kind of feel like a character within this film. I think they've succeeded, and I think it fully even helps enhance the Maddie character very much, because you really grow to love her as this film kind of goes along. And by the end point of the film, I obviously won't spoil what happens, but I was rooting for her in almost the same way that I was rooting for someone like Jamie Lee Curtis in the original Halloween. I found myself...
It's a perfect comparison. Yeah.
I found myself that engaged by it, surprisingly. And by using that sense of space as this tool for claustrophobia, I think only helps enhance the horror of this film. Because you're absolutely right. The film is... The film's horrifying in kind of a traditional sense. The way that Mike Flanagan kind of builds tension, it's not something we haven't seen before, but there's a dramatic urgency to this film that I think helps enhance it. And utilizing that sense of space and that claustrophobia and even paranoia, I think, is very key in making this film very successful as it is. But not to knock his direction style, because I do think Flanagan does a lot of really interesting things in this film. And there are moments of this film that I found very unpredictable. There are certain things that happened that really did take me by surprise. I obviously don't want to get into too many specifics of what those are, but I have to give him a lot of credit for taking a film this brief and this short, but really playing with it in the best way that he could, and he really took advantage of it. It's a film that's very much kind of in the tradition of something like the movie Wait Until Dark, which came out, I think it was in 1967, that came out with Audrey Hepburn, obviously dealing with a blind woman alone in this house when she has some intruders coming in. This is looking at a deaf woman, and they utilize her disability in this film in a very good and effective way, not just for horror filmmaking, but I think in helping to build this character and the way that it plays with these notions of perceived disabilities and what she has to do to basically survive, and this killer that she is faced with. She makes a lot of very wise decisions and a lot of very bad decisions. And even the killer in this film does the same thing. Even he sometimes goes maybe a little over the top, but I think that's kind of the point of the film.
Right.
But at the same time, it all leads to this surprising and emotionally driven climax that I found very emotionally rewarding in a very surprising way. So I'm with you. Very small film, but if you have Netflix, and I think pretty much everyone on this planet kind of does by this point, check it out. This is a really good little film.
Yeah, and you brought up those choices that both of our main characters make. But I think there's a difference between a bad choice and a stupid choice.
Yes.
And I don't think there's not a single moment in this film where I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yes.
Horror trope. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. You know, all of these decisions actually make some form of logical sense for each one of their characters. Mm-hmm. I just think it was such a surprising watch. It's got that stereotypical horror setup. It's got, you know, a woman alone in a house, right? It's yep. And also in the middle of the woods. Like, it's got all this going on for it. And gave me just one more reason to stay in the big city. No, thank you. I am not interested in being that isolated, because look what it leads to, situations like this. But in all seriousness, like, it is a really, really solid horror film. I think I kind of look at this as on kind of a different scale, right? You know, like, it's not like you're comparing it to Oscar winners. You're comparing it to other horror films. And for a horror film, this is top level stuff. And also just really, really efficient filmmaking. I was really impressed.
Absolutely. And I think efficient is probably the best word to really describe Mike Flanagan here and his direction style, because he's very brief and to the point, but I think that really helps build this urgency of this film. And at the same time, he doesn't sacrifice character development in this film, because the character of Maddie really, really develops in this film. There's a moment two-thirds of the way through where I literally jumped out of my chair going, No, that did not just happen. I think you know what part I'm talking about.
I do indeed.
but the fact that it made me react that way means that the movie was absolutely doing something right. And even more so than just doing something right, it really built a character that I really grown to care for. And that's why the movie was so surprisingly dramatic for me. And there's a moment towards that leads into the film's climax where she's typing something on her laptop. That kind of,
it's a great moment.
Oh my gosh, it was surprisingly powerful.
I think actually, to me, that is the most important moment in the entire film,
because I would agree.
As a viewer in that moment, for once in a horror film, I did not know what was going to happen. The film has real stakes, and of course I won't ruin it,
right?
But we don't know if or who is going to survive this encounter.
Absolutely.
It's really impressive work, especially in a horror film. Like, it, you know, you've got your tropes, you've got what you expect.
Yeah.
So for a movie to genuinely shock you out of your seat and make you worry about these characters, that's really good work.
Absolutely. And as we were talking about, it's not a film that is so new of its kind. We've seen these types of films before. And for a film that is this brief in its execution, the fact that Flanagan can execute and bring all of that out into fruition like this is incredible. And I think calling it efficient filmmaking like that, as you mentioned, is very key in describing it. And the dramatic urgency is absolutely there. There's another character I do want to talk about briefly. I wanted to get your thoughts a little bit about him. We did talk about him just a little bit, but the quote-unquote killer of this film, I wanted to get a few more thoughts on what you thought of him more so as a character, not so much as a performance, but as a character, and how he kind of relates to not just this film, but looking at a character like this and how it differs from horror films that we have seen of this type in kind of recent years.
I love how little we know about this character, even at the end of the film. There's not, you know, if you look back into the annals of horror, I mean, you have characters like Freddy and like Michael Myers and Jason. And even some of those characters don't speak, we know what their motivations are, even if they don't make a whole lot of sense. In this case, there's a lot of mystery surrounding that. And that makes this performance all the more terrifying.
Yeah.
And what also gets you is there's a certain amount of glee he takes in what he's doing.
Yes.
He does a lot of teasing. There are moments in the film where he could have ended things, and he chooses to kind of mock his prey, which is really unnerving. I love this performance.
And that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, because I have seen some reactions to this film that kind of criticize this character for being quote-unquote stupid. I guess. I don't think that's the case. I think it goes...
No, he just underestimates her.
Absolutely. It not only does it play into the film thematically, as I was talking about our notions of perceived disabilities and underestimating our prey like that, or maybe not prey, but in this case, prey. but I think... The way
just found out something about Brendan Cassidy.
Oh,
my goodness.
I guess I like to stalk. I stalk deaf people. That's what I do.
Oh, jeez. There's your drop for
there,
the episode.
There, Mike is dropped. Good night, everybody. But no, what I was going to say, though, is that it reminded me a lot of, I forget who wrote the novel, but The Most Dangerous Game, which was...
Oh.
Yeah, which,
great short story.
Absolutely, and it was also referenced in a film like Zodiac, which is one of my favorite films of all time. But the way that the killer in this film does kind of play with his prey like that, I think goes along with a short story like that. And the fact that he does underestimate this character makes a lot of sense for him. So I would never call his actions in this film stupid. He obviously makes some choices that you could argue could be, because he could have just easily ended things like you were saying, but it's his choice not to. It's not that he couldn't, it's his choice not to.
He makes mistakes, he makes errors in judgment, but he's not stupid.
Absolutely, he's not stupid. In fact, I think he actually does a very convincing job when, not really a spoiler here, but when he has to pretend he's a police officer at one point of the film.
Yeah.
He was surprisingly convincing. And if I were in that other character's shoes, I would have reacted the exact same way. So I think his performance is incredibly strong in this film. And I think it's very supportive of what the film is trying to get thematically about those notions of perceived disability. For the sake of time, let's get the final thoughts and grades. So any final thoughts, David? And what grade would you give Hush?
Yeah, I think this is well worth your time, especially if you have Netflix. Even if you're not a horror movie fan, I think it's worth watching. I think the characters are interesting, the motivations are interesting. I think, you know, we talked earlier about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, about how, you know, there was a gay character who was very masculine.
Yeah.
And you know, to tie that into this, we have a character, like you said, with a perceived disability, who is very strong, very capable, and very willing to do what she has to do to try to survive. And that is something we don't see very often, with whether you're talking about deafness, blindness, you know, people in wheelchairs, whatever it may be.
Right.
So it's awesome that we get that. And I really, really enjoyed the movie, like, way more than I thought I would. So, but I think overall, as an entire film, like, there are, of course, moments that aren't as great as others.
Sure.
So I guess I'd give it like a B plus.
Okay.
And that's a really enjoyable watch.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It sounds like, just from a grade standpoint, I might go a little higher than you. And I think it's because of that emotional resonance that I found in this film. And maybe I'm a bit biased because, and even though you and I have disagreed on a lot of horror films, I love horror films overall. And I especially love horror films that are able to succeed in blending that aesthetic of horror, but bring a certain dramatic urgency to the film at the same time. That's why a movie like The Exorcist is one of my favorite movies of all time. And
I'm with you.
Yeah. And that's a film, just kind of veering off into that film for a second, that's a film that can really unnerve you, but you can watch it as a straight up drama. And the movie is heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking at the same time. And that's why it works in so many different ways, thus becoming a movie that feels like a new movie every time I watch it. I wouldn't go quite that far with a movie like Hush. It's definitely a more simplistic film in its execution, but it does have that dramatic undercurrent that I do think allows for rewatches like that, and I could be moved by it. And it's very rare that I could see someone write the words "coward" on a window without getting too detailed, and it would move me. It seriously did. And I also don't want to spoil too much here, but there is an animal in this film, and you know how animals are normally treated in horror films these days. The way that is executed, it blew me away. It's
interesting choice of words, executed.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yes.
Yes, but I totally agree with what you're saying, yeah.
I didn't even try to do that. That was kind of an accident. I really did enjoy this film overall, too. In fact, I would probably go as far as to give this an A-. I think it was quite great, especially of a genre, and I'm with you. If you have Netflix, be sure to check it out. It's a simple watch. It's a short watch, but it's a rewarding watch. We will have some more thoughts on our Letterboxd page with this one as well. And if you agree or disagree on our takes on Hush, if you have had a chance to see it yet, leave us a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com. We would love to hear your thoughts. On that note, though, that'll do it for this week's show. Before we get going, though, David, thanks for being here again, man, and on such short notice.
Yeah, happy to be here. I got to talk about two really enjoyable movies that we actually agreed on. The impossible has happened. It's good.
I know. So hopefully we can have a three-way agreement coming when I actually join you this weekend on this show. I think you said that film that we're talking about was a first-time watch for you pretty recently.
Correct.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't think you know my thoughts on that film yet.
I don't think so. No, it'll be interesting.
So I'll save it for then. We'll be surprised. once again, though, why don't you tell us a little bit about Pop Culture Case Study and where we can find you on the internet?
Yeah, again, Pop Culture Case Study, a movie podcast where we kind of analyze movies from a psychological lens. You can find me on the following films network, on Twitter at PC Case Study, and at your podcatcher of choice under Pop Culture Case Study.
Yeah, absolutely. And great to have you here again, man. And if you haven't been following David's work, be sure to do so, please. I highly recommend your work, man. And thanks again for being here. Looking forward to this weekend. I'm sure we'll have a great discussion.
Nice. Thank you.
But that should do it for this week's show. Be sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/InSessionFilm. Follow us on Twitter at InSessionFilm and Google+. Our username is InSessionFilm. You can also check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/InSessionFilm or email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. We will respond to every piece of email that we get. And as I mentioned, we're active on Letterboxd. We put a lot more thoughts on the other films that we watch there. So you can check us out there at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. You could also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Jabbercast. But while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review there. We'd appreciate some feedback there as well. And you can also find us now at Google Play Music, which you can find on our website. The link is there at InSessionFilm.com. Our podcasts are syndicated every single week at GeekCastRadio.com and the LAMB Podcast Network. And you can also check out our Listen Now page on our website at InSessionFilm.com/listen-now. And last but certainly not least, the In Session Film podcast is supported by our awesome listeners like you. If you want to help us out, go to our website at InSessionFilm.com. Click on the bonus content tab here in our main menu to hear all of our bonus content for a small donation of 99 cents. We've also got the In Session Film store, or you can simply go to InSessionFilm.com/donate, and you'll see all of our information there and how you can help us out. But lastly, I would highly recommend checking out our mobile app, which you can find for just a one-time fee of $1.99, and you can find that on the Amazon market for Android devices, the Windows 8 phone store for Windows devices, and the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. And again, all those details are on our site at InSessionFilm.com/apps. That was a mouthful. That was absolutely a mouthful. And I always love doing that when I'm here by myself, so I blame you for that, JD, but I'll forgive you when you come back on the show this weekend. But that should do it then. So before we get out of here, David, any final thoughts on anything before we adjourn?
Improve your life and watch Shane Black movies.
I could not have said it any better myself. In fact, I think I'm just going to have to end it there. Seriously, that was poetry. I do have one thing I got to plug. So one last final thought from me. Be sure to look out for our main show this weekend, because on episode 170, we will continue talking about the great Shane Black in The Nice Guys, which gets a wide release this weekend. And going off of that, I'm looking forward to this as well. We will be doing our top three favorite buddy cop movies. And there are a lot to pick from, especially if we kind of play with the rules a little bit and go a little bit outside of the bounds of what the traditional buddy cop film might be. There are a lot of surprisingly great ones out there, and I did not expect that, but it should be a lot of fun. For our last discussion segment, though, we will be talking a segment of Are You Down?, where in relation to buddy cop films, we've had quite a few already start to get adaptations into TV shows, such as Lethal Weapon, Rush Hour is coming out. I believe Training Day has also released a trailer for a TV show as well. And in fact, you know, we just got done talking about horror movies, David, but The Exorcist is getting a TV show as well.
Stop it. Just stop it. So, leave it alone. It's a classic.
I know.
Stop it.
You would probably enjoy listening to film critic Mark Kermode, who talks about how The Exorcist...
He's one of my favorites. Listen to him every week.
He's great, but he I don't know if you know this, but The Exorcist is his favorite film of all time.
Yep.
And he also says his least favorite film of all time is Exorcist II, The Heretic.
There you go. See? Leave it alone.
Absolutely. But kind of going off of that, though, because we're expressing these types of feelings toward these TV adaptations, we are doing that segment of Are You Down? to basically let our thoughts on the table if we are down with seeing all these adaptations coming out on the television world, which should be a lot of fun. Until then, though, thanks again for being here, David. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you guys next time on the In Session Film Podcast.